coming up on this week's mini episode of the Drew Perowit Podcast.
The good news is we know that self-compassion is one of the best ways for people to deal with past trauma. You can actually earn adult secure attachment through self-compassion.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Blue Blocks. So you know that I've done so many episodes on the topic of sleep because I'm obsessed with it. Sleep is one of those things that you nail it, you get your sleep right, you optimize your sleep, it changes everything. It changes everything. That's why the clinicians at our medical clinic and a lot of my friends that have been on this podcast, sleep is one of the biggest areas that they focus on. I'm always trying to come up with better solutions for sleep. Now, there's a ton of things that you can do that are super low cost, and there's also gadgets that you can include in that can make a difference. Now, the thing about gadgets is that many of the gadgets out there can be pretty inexpensive or inaccessible to a lot of people, but there are some low-tech gadgets, and I want to talk about one of them, and that is affordable blue light blocking glasses. This is a super easy way to block the blue light from screens and from the light that's coming from your room. And what it does is it boosts your body's natural melatonin production. I love the blue light blocking glasses made by Blue Blocks because unlike other mass-produced brands, their glasses are based on peer-reviewed literature and the science of how light impacts health. Blue Blocks glasses have improved my sleep and I've handed a few out to some friends and it's helped their sleep as well too, which means now they have more energy throughout the day. The team at Blue Blocks makes a variety of high-quality blue light glasses to cover different areas of your life. For example, they have clear lenses, blue light line to combat computer screen and artificial light. They have summer glow line to block blue light, but add in a little yellow light for mood-boosting effects. And their sleep line, which also you can wear a few hours before bed, and that blocks 100% of blue and green light for optimum melatonin production, improved sleep. That's what I'm all about. That's the one that I recommend the most to folks. Blue Blocks has more than 40 stylish frame options available in prescription, non-prescription, and readers. And they even, get this, have kids' sizes. Right now, Blue Blocks is offering my listeners 20% off. Just go to blueblocks.com/Drew and use the code Drew. That's D-H-R-U, all one word. So Blue Blocks is blueblocks.com/DHRU with the code Drew, DHRU. I hope you'll check them out so that you can get better quality sleep to give love and attention to all the things you care about in the day. Have you ever gone to your doctor for your normal annual physical and after sitting with them for 10 minutes, they quickly look at your labs and tell you, hey, everything looks normal. Keep it up and I'll see you again next year. Maybe even give you a nice little pat on the back. I can't tell you how many listeners of the podcast have told me that they've had this exact experience and how honestly, how frustrating it can be. Now, we all know that normal isn't always optimal. Just because something's not wrong doesn't mean that we feel great. So traditional medicine is great at finding out when something is blatantly wrong, but they don't always do the best job when we need to highlight how we can do better. So what if you could get detailed nutritional and lifestyle guidance based on your individual needs? That's what Inside Tracker does. Inside Tracker was founded in 2009 by top scientists from acclaimed universities in the field of aging, genetics, and biometrics. Its mission is to help people live long, healthy, productive lives by optimizing their bodies from the inside out. Inside Tracker is cutting-edge technology, and it looks at your blood, DNA, lifestyle, and it has fitness tracker data, and they give you science-backed recommendations for positive changes to your daily habits. It's all about the daily habits. With their app, you can track your progress every day, and they have an amazing support team to help you with any questions you might have. Inside Tracker looks at everything from metabolic and inflammatory markers to top nutrients and hormones. It even tests your cholesterol levels to help you better manage stress, and you have the option to see how your inner age compares to your chronological age. Traditional lab tests can be hard to read on your own, but Inside Tracker makes their results easy to understand and even provides tips on how to use food first for optimal nutrition. Right now, Inside Tracker is offering my podcast community 25% off their system. Just go to insidetracker.com/Drew. That's DHRU to get your discount code and try it out for yourself. That's Inside Tracker, INSIDE Tracker, TRACKER.com/Drew, DHRU for your 25% off. Hi everyone, Drew Prode here. It's often easier to show kindness and compassion to a friend or loved one than it is to ourselves. Many of us grew up thinking that being hard on ourselves was the way to success, but an inner voice wired for self-criticism actually holds us back from living fulfilled and joyful lives. My guests on today's mini episode are Dr. Andrea Pennington and Dr. Kristen Neff, and they talk to us about where self-criticism comes from and the biggest hurdles that stop people from truly loving themselves. My first guest, Dr. Andrea Pennington, is an integrative physician, acupuncturist, meditation teacher, number one international best-selling author, and TEDx speaker. With her extensive medical experience and training in trauma recovery, combined with her experience in traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture, Dr. Pennington helps people build resilience, reclaim vitality, and thrive despite inevitable trauma and drama that life brings. Let's listen in, starting with Dr. Andrea Pennington. You know, you have such an interesting intersection of being a physician and acupuncturist and having your whole world of integrative and traditional medicine and Chinese medicine. And you have all these modalities and philosophies that have influenced you combined with all the work that you do on brain health and plant medicine. I'm curious, when somebody asks you, where does this voice come from? Where does self-judgment come from? What do you share with them?
Well, I tell them that they weren't born with it, but it got constructed. You know, all of these little voices, it's generally not just one, by the way. There are usually several who have different tones of voice and different language. They tend to be an amalgamation or an assembly of voices we've heard outside of us. So typically, once we start growing up, all of the influences of our childhood, from our caretakers and parents and siblings to our peers, our teachers at school, the coaches, then of course the media, all of these sort of impressions are impacting us. And so when we're young, typically, if you've at least had a safe and comfortable household, you are typically kind of rambunctious and expressive. Until someone teases you or shames you or says that, you know, little girls don't do that, big boys don't do that. And because our developing ego, which is just a construct, is so tuned in to our survival, that ego starts to record those messages. Okay, if girls don't do that, then I'm never going to do that. And every time I want to do that, the ego and the brain are going to send us these warning signals like, you're either going to get punished or slapped or belittled again. And so it's a protective mechanism. You know, our ego doesn't want us to get kicked out of the tribe or the family. We want to be accepted. And so we incorporate these voices into our psyche and they come up later on in life. And of course, not everybody hears actual voices. It can sometimes just be a feeling like, you know, oh, I'm such an idiot. I don't find that everyone always has that voice, but they know that meaning of that kind of a script.
Let's make this a little bit personal. I would love for you to share a little bit, you know, I've heard you in another interview that you did with my business partner, Dr. Hyman. You said, you know, you didn't have an overly traumatic background. You know, I think sometimes people hear about this and are like, I had a great life. You know, my parents were fantastic, or I never went through anything, you know, crazy that's out there. But I think part of what you're saying is that everybody, you know, it's all relative. Everybody, no matter, you don't have to have a, you know, intense upbringing, although that can be a part of it. It's just that all of humanity is going to go through some version of it. So actually, before I go to my question, let me ask that first part. Is this something that everybody goes through when they're growing up?
Absolutely. And it can still happen in adulthood. We all incorporate some voice. Now, of course, you and I are talking about the negative, mean, and critical voice. But you might have had really supportive parents, you know, or a great coach who encouraged you. So you may have an inner dialogue that says, you can do this. You got it. right? But for most of us, for everyone else, yes, we have incorporated these voices from somewhere.
Let's make this personal, as I was going to get to before, but I kind of cut myself off. Let's talk about your life growing up. What were some of these voices that you heard in your own experiences?
Well, it's true. I didn't have a particularly traumatic experience, but because my parents were divorced and I was the youngest of three children, I was kind of always trying to get the approval and attention of my father. And because of how my father grew up, he had this belief that the only important thing in life is to get a good education and to get a good job and that sort of secure pension, you know, that was his paradigm. And so what I heard growing up is every time I wanted to play trumpet or I was in a new play at school or when I wanted to join the cheerleading squad, I had my dad's voice coming up like, oh, you know, you're a dilettante, just like your old dad, you know, you really need to focus. And so it wasn't particularly harsh. He, of course, was well-meaning. He wanted me to be successful in life. But it really ended up impacting me because every time I had an impulse to do something creative or I wanted to explore something new, I had that voice inside of me telling me that I was a dilettante and that's a bad thing, that I couldn't focus and that was a bad thing. And so, of course, I didn't go through life thinking, oh, I'm just a bad person, until it got to the point that it was so overwhelming. I had developed kind of this compensation that said, okay, well, I've better make sure I'm doing so many other good things, you know, this perfectionism and always on this achievement track to try to compensate for any time I did something quote unquote bad, that it became overwhelming. And I felt like this literal weight on my shoulders nearly constantly until my mid-30s. I mean, it sounds crazy to say, but I literally finally woke up to the fact that I didn't love myself. I was hating on myself with these different voices.
My next guest, Dr. Krista Neff, is an associate professor of education psychology at the University of Texas at Austin and a pioneer in the field of radical self-compassion research. In addition to writing numerous academic articles and book chapters on the topic, she is the author of the book Self-Compassion, The Proven Power of Being Kind to Yourself. In this mini-episode clip, Dr. Neff talks to us about why we can't ignore the body when it comes to healing the mind and the importance of checking in with our physical state, acknowledging our discomfort, and identifying what might be physically manifesting as a result of how we feel. Dr. Neff also shares a powerful self-compassion exercise for anyone that's spiraling downward, caught in the pattern, the destructive pattern of self-criticism. It'll take you from calm to peace. Let's listen in to Dr. Krista Neff. What do you see as being some of the biggest hurdles or blockages that prevent people from stepping into loving themselves, even once they are aware? So I become aware, okay, this is the pattern that's going on. Yeah. What are some of the old blockages that can get in the way?
Yeah, so we know, I mean, it's not surprising that early childhood upbringing is related to self-compassion as an adult. So people with secure attachment, which means their parents consistently met their needs and gave them a sense of love and worth, they're more self-compassionate as adults. Parents who are negligent or, you know, people have insecure attachment, meaning they couldn't count on their parents to be there for them. It's harder for them to be self-compassionate as an adult. On people whose parents criticize them a lot or just grew up in families where there was a lot of conflict tend to be less self-compassionate because it wasn't modeled for them. And the people who got the you might say, the most struggle with self-compassion are people with abuse histories. Because again, compassion is formed out of this attachment system, this caregiving system. If things are going normally, when we feel, when we're with our family, we feel safe, we feel secure. But when in fact, those signals of care from your parents are mixed with signals of fear because they're abusing you, either physically or emotionally or in whatever way, then what can happen actually for people with abuse histories is when they start to be kind to themselves, it actually creates fear. We have a term for it, it's called backdraft. So backdraft is a term because, you know, when you go to a house that's on fire and you fling open the doors of the fire and the fresh air rushes in and the flames rush out, that can happen with our hearts. You know, if you grew up in a maybe very, you know, abusive or just insecure a family, you had to close the doors of your heart to survive. You know, and maybe it wasn't your family. Maybe it was just middle school. Maybe you're bullied in middle school. And the way you got through it and survived is you just shut down. You had to, you know, you had to out of self-protection. So you close down your heart and you kind of just get through. And then you start opening the door of your hearts with self-compassion. And you might say the fresh air of the love rushes in and then the old pain rushes out. It could actually be quite disturbing. When we teach our workshops, we talk about it.
And it could show up like, I'm opening my heart again. I'm going to get hurt. The same stuff that happened before is going to happen again.
Yeah. So there can be fear. There can be anger. There can be some people with like trauma histories can start disassociating. It can be actually quite destabilizing because how they stabilize themselves is by shutting down. The thing to know about backdraft, this is actually a good sign. It's a good sign because it means you're opening your heart. It also means you have to go more slowly and, you know, hopefully work with a therapist and kind of, you know, put your toe in and close down and kind of open and close consciously to try to regulate how much the kindness you let in so that you get used to it and you go slowly. The good news is we know that a self-compassion is one of the best ways for people to deal with past trauma. You can actually earn adult secure attachment through self-compassion.
Give yourself the security that you were missing when you were younger.
Exactly. So you start to reprogram your brain. You start to give yourself that unconditionally loving, kind, supportive response that you didn't get as a child. And then you can start kind of reparenting yourself and form new attachment schemas.
I think that's so important to mention because for whoever's listening, that's like, well, I didn't grow up in that secure household. I didn't have that. You can literally give that to yourself starting today.
You can. And again, to remember, it may be a little bumpy at first because it will, you know, we say when you give yourself unconditional love, you immediately remember all the conditions under which you are not loved. But this is normal and it's natural. It doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. It means you're doing it right. But it just means you need to go a little more slowly and carefully. So for instance, one of the techniques we teach for giving yourself compassion is like putting your hands on your heart. And for many people that feels really good. But for some people, maybe with an abuse history or just whatever, a lot of trauma in their background, that doesn't feel good. That feels scary. So we teach them, well, then pet your cat. Or take a bubble bath. There's lots of variations on how you can care for yourself, and you want to do things that actually feel good and help you feel safe.
Well, Dr. Neff, this has been a fantastic conversation. And you know, at the beginning when we were just catching up individually, you said it'd be nice for you to share a practice if you have time. I'd love for you to share a practice. It's 10:20 or so. It's 12:20 your time. How are you doing on time?
I'll do a 10-minute practice, actually.
Okay.
You know what I'll do is I often teach a practice called the self-compassion break, which is on my website if anyone wants to go. It's at selfcompassion.org. But I can teach a different one. It's kind of more related to what we're saying. This is a practice that more generates the yin self-compassion, kind of when you need some acceptance. And it's a way of similar. This is the practice I do when I wake up at 3 a.m. that we talked about. So I'm going to just lead through a short version of this. Okay. So I'm going to close my eyes. You can close your eyes if you want. And it helps to close your eyes just so you can be a little more introspective, right? And settle into your body. Okay. And so I'd invite you to think of some situation in your life right now is causing some emotional difficulty. Okay, please don't choose your most overwhelming difficulty, because if you're overwhelmed, you actually won't be able to concentrate. It's something that's challenging. So maybe it's anxiety of you know, catching the coronavirus, or you're worried about someone, or maybe you're feeling lonely, or maybe you're feeling economic insecurity, right? So some situation you choose, something that feels right to work with, not too big, something that's distressing. So So just call up that situation in your mind's eye or think what's happening. All right, and then I would invite you to just ask yourself, what emotions am I feeling right now? And there may be several, right? And so when you feel the emotion, just kind of make a soft mental note of what it is. Oh, I see that's loneliness. Or that's uncertainty. Or fear. Or grief. Sadness. Right? Whatever it is, we're focusing on a difficult situation, so these will be negative emotions typically. So see if you can just kind of explore what's here. Maybe what's here is confusion. Maybe you don't even know, and you can work with that as well. And then see if you can decide on what seems to be the strongest emotion for you right now. Just choose one to work with. Again, it could be confusion, or maybe it's something like sadness, fear. And then I would invite you to see if you can find where you are actually feeling that emotion in your body as a felt sense, right? So it might be like a hollowness in your chest, or gripping in your throat, or a tightness in your stomach. Or maybe you can't locate it exactly. It may be just an overall sense of stress or uneasiness. Just drop out of your head now and just feel your body. Where do you actually feel this uncomfortable emotion as a physical sensation? Okay, and so the first thing I'd invite you to do is see if you can soften your body a little bit around that felt sense of the emotion, right? So usually difficult emotions are like kind of tension in our body. See if you can soften a little bit around it, kind of relaxing your body around it, making a little more space for it, a little more room for it. And then we want to be kind to ourselves because this is difficult. So one thing I'd invite you to do is see if you can put a hand over the place in the body where you're feeling the difficult emotion. Right, put a comforting hand. If you can't figure out exactly where the emotion is, you can just put your hand on your heart or some other place, your stomach, to just give yourself the sense of support. Use physical touch to kind of soothe your body, to reassure your body that you're here, and of your own presence and support. And then asking yourself, you know, what do I need to hear right now to support and care for myself? Right? You might imagine, you know, what would I say to a good friend who is in the exact same situation I'm in? What types of words of support and kindness would I naturally say to someone I cared about? And just trying this out with yourself. Maybe something like, I know how hard this is for you. I'm here for you. Or, you know, it'll be okay. Or, I love you and care for you. Right? Whatever it is you need to hear, just like you might say to a good friend. And then kind of held in your own loving, connected presence, see if you can just simply allow the emotion to be there. Right? No need to fix it or make it go away. Right? Just simply allow things to be as they are in this moment. There may be actions you'll take later. For now, in this moment, this is how it is. Can I allow myself to feel as I feel? But with great love. Okay, and then when you're ready, you can let go of the practice and open your eyes. So that's, I did it short. I actually have this practice on my website. It's called Working with Difficult Emotions, Soft and Soothe Allow is the nickname.
So that's great.
That's the type of practice. It really helps to go into your body because your brain is where the storyline is and often generates like the doomsday scenarios or the fear. If you move to your body, you can actually give yourself compassion in your body and it's more slow moving. And in many ways, it goes in deeper.
And I think the friend, you know, what would you say to a friend or what would a friend say to you? I think that's very important because it really just adds a nice context for me, you know, the feelings that came up and where I was putting attention on my body, which was my, you know, my abdomen region. Uh-huh. When you had said like, you know, checking in and like the way that a friend would communicate to you, you know, communicate to yourself, it's an acknowledgement of like, you're doing fantastic. Like the things that are there, you know, there's always things in your life that you feel that should be further along or should be here, should. And then you check in and you're like, if I actually was aware of everything right now, I know that it was okay.
One of the most powerful tools we have for healing is already inside of us. When we are self-critical, we raise the stress response on our bodies and we spiral downwards. Becoming aware of our negative patterns and reframing our self-talk actually changes our ability to heal on a deep and cellular level. There's never been a better time to go inward and to think about the relationship you have with yourself and self-talk. Thanks for tuning into this week's mini episode of the Drew Peroic Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, I'd love for you to do me a favor. Send it to someone who you think it could make a difference in their day or in their life. I'll see you next week.